Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Sanhedrin Daf Pei Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. In the opening sugya, we actually find ourselves in the middle of what had started already back on Daf, Pei Vov Omid Beis, Pei and Pei Zayin. At the very bottom of Pei Vov Omid Beis, the Gemara cited a posuk as part of a braisa, which the Gemara has been darshaning all along the way. On Pei Zayin Omid Aleph, the Gemara was presented with three Shitas Tanoim in dealing with under what circumstances is a Zokein Mamre Chayev. So, for the best introduction for today's shiur, it would be advised to have learned already the shiur from Daf Pei Zayin. As such, we are in the middle of quoting from a pasuk, Devarim Perek Yud Zayin Pasuk Ches, and for the benefit of those who didn't hear this pasuk beforehand, let's just read the pasuk. Once again, it's dealing with the development and the stages that lead up to a Zokein Mamre. Ki Yipolei Mimcho Devar Lamishpot, Bein Dam Ledam, Bein Din Ledin, Uvei nega lenega, divrei rivois bishorecha, vekamto vialiso el amokoi masher yivchar Hashem elokecha boi. On Pei Ches Omid Aleph, 4 lines from the top, we will be looking at the word divrei of that particular posuk. The most important point, though, to remember as we start our shiur today, is that we are operating within Shitas Rav Yehuda, who said on Daf Pei Zayin Omid Aleph, let us correct ourselves, we're working within Shitas Rebbe Meir, that said that a Zokein Mamre does not take place unless he is arguing with the Sanhedrin on a matter that if done b'mezid, there would be a Chiyuv Kores, and b'shogeg a Chiyuv Chatas. That's called Dover Shezdoinei Chayav Al, Dover Shechayav Al Zdoinei Kores, v'al Shigigaso Chatas. Later in the Gemara, there will be some note made of Shitas Rebbe Yehuda. But for the time being, we're working within Shitas Rebbe Meir. And at every stage, we are to discover what aspect of this particular issue could be a machlokis between the Zokein Mamre and the Sanhedrin that would have, as part of it, a possibility of Dovar Shizdono Kores v'shigigaso chatos. As we pointed out in the previous year, in many of the cases, they are not directly part of the halacha over which they're arguing, but rather it's an outgrowth of their argument that finds itself in a money form. And as a result of a discrepancy or a controversy regarding the matter, the ownership of the money comes into question, and that leads to a matter that could be Zdono Koresh Yosef Chatos in the following sense, that if the money is taken by one of the parties and is used to marry a woman with that money, is she considered a married woman or not? And the issue of establishing the marital status of a woman has nafkaminas regarding serious offenses if there is immorality that ensues. So as we turn back to our Gemara, the 4th line from the top of Pei Ches Amud Aleph, Divrei, this is, as we said before, a quote from the Pasuk, Devarim Yud Zayin, Pasuk Ches, Elu Ha'arachim V'Haromim V'Hakdeshos. Number one, Ha'arachim. This issue of Arachim is a situation where a person dedicates his or someone else's Torah value. Torah value is established by gender and age. what is the controversy that may arise between the Zokei Mamre and the Sanhedrin? The Plukta de Rabbi Meir Rabbanan. Their argument may parallel a Machlokes Tanoim as follows. Disnan, Hamarich Pochos Miben Chodesh, someone who dedicates a Torah value of someone under 30 days of age. The truth is that there is no established Torah value. There's no erech for a person under 30 days of age. But nevertheless, he says, I want to dedicate the erech of a pochos miben chodesh. Rabbi Meir Omer no sein domov. Rabbi Meir says that you have to give his market value. Market value is a different value than Torah value. Torah value, as we mentioned before, is an established amounts of money depending on age and gender, regardless of physical qualifications. Rabbi Meir, based on his own shita, that ein odo motzi dvorav levatola, a person, when he says something in the realm of dedications to the temple, he doesn't say something that has no ramifications. If he says something, it has to have some kind of practical implication. Therefore, even though there is no such thing as an erech for a pochos miben chodesh, nevertheless, if someone said it, according to Rabbi Meir, he has to give the market value of such an individual. The chachomim omrim lo omar klum. The chachomim say a person might blurt out things that have no actual bearing. And therefore, if a person dedicated the erech of a pochos miben chodesh, his words are meaningless and he has no obligation to the temple funds. Now, what is the practical application of this as far as Dover Shezdoinu Kores Shigosuchatos? Rashi gives two examples. According to Rabbi Meir, if a person made such a dedication, so the money that he sets aside for his dedication becomes Kodesh, becomes holy, because what he said has bearing. And as a result of that, he would not be able to Mekadesh a woman with that money. The woman would not be considered married if she was unaware of the fact that it's hekdish money. On the other hand, the Chachomim say, since what he said has no bearings with regard to his temple dedication, the money would be able to mekadesh a woman with it. And as we said before, without repeating all of the details, the establishment of a marital status for a woman has nafkaminas, has bearings with regard to dovor shezdono kores, the shigagoso chatos, in the event that this woman would engage in immorality. Hacharomim, bepluto de Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseiro v'rabbonon. Haromim is a type of vow. A person says that a particular item, hare, such and such item, is cherem olai. Cherem, what is a cherem? We said it's a type of dedication, but to whom? So this will be the machlokis Tanoim that the Gemara just made reference to, as is found in the following Tanaic source. As you can see in our Gemara marking system, when we saw just a moment ago a framed section, this too, a framed section, represents a Tanaic source. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira Omer, Stam Charomim. When a person says Cherim without explaining anything additional to that, equals Lebedek Habayis. It's a temple dedication to the temple repair fund. Shenemar kol cherem kodesh kodeshim hu lashem. We've dashed underlined the word cherem, showing you that the simple appearance of the word cherem, according to this opinion, is for the temple fund. As a result of that, the money that's set aside would be holy. And if it were used for personal purposes, there would be mi'ila involved. Mi'ila is a situation where one has unlawful benefit from temple funds or temple things dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash. And as a result of that, he would be chayev an osham mi'ilos, a korban, a sacrifice, to atone for his having benefited from these monies. Now, if one would eat from that slaughtered korban while he is tamei, he would be chayev kares. That's an example of dover shezdoinoi kores v'shikigoso chatos. Hence, according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, the a stam cherem, being that it is lebedek habayis, would involve the obligation to bring that korban. As we just mentioned, it has this dono kores aspect to it. V'chachomim omrim stam charomim lekoyin. If a person says he's machrim something, he uses this term cherem as a dedication, what he's really doing is he's dedicating it to the kohanim. And as a result of that, there is no mi'ilah. it becomes Kohen property, not temple property. Shenamar, Kasadeh, Kistei Hacherim, La Kohen, Tie Achuzaso. So from this pasuk you see that the Chirim goes to the Kohanim. Well, Im Kain Matam Alomer Kodesh Kodeshim Hu Lashem. What about the previous pasuk that indicated the Chirim is seemingly of a temple nature? The answer is no, not that the actual Chirim, the actual dedication belongs to the temple, but rather, Shechal Al Kodshe Kodshim V'Al Kodshim Kalim. This means to say that if a person is standing opposite a sacrifice, an animal that's dedicated to be a sacrifice, and he says, I want this animal to be a chirim, then he is obligated to give a certain value to the Beis HaMikdash regarding those animals. And we are purposefully not getting into details. However, what it is necessary to point out is that the chirim dedication takes effect on something that has been dedicated as a sacrifice. Hekdeshos. What is the machlokis between the Zokei Mamre and the Sanhedrin concerning Hekdesh that would have an application to Zdono Korei Shigosu Chatos? Biplukta de Rabbi Lezer ben Yankiv Rabbonon. Their machlokis might parallel this machlokis Tanoim. The Sanya, Rabbi Lezer ben Yankiv Omer. Afilu Tsinura Shel Hekdesh. Tsinura is described as a little fork that is Shel Hekdesh. Let us say someone had dedicated a Tsinura Shel Hekdesh and now wants to redeem it, wants to extricate it from its temple status. He needs to have an evaluation done on it to know how much money to give in exchange for it. Tsricha Asor B'nei Adam Lefdosa. According to Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, 10 people are needed to evaluate it. If we take a glance at Rashi, there's a Rashi Asura Kohanim, Kinemeforsh Bepera Kama, as is explained in the first parak of this Maseches, Asura Kohanim Ksuva Beparsha. In the Parsha dealing with items dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash, the word Kohen appears 10 times in the Parsha. Im Nifdeis Bepochus Me'asor B'nei Adam, if it's redeemed by less than 10 people, Adayin Hekdesh Hi, then the fork, in this case, would still be of a holy nature and not redeemed because it didn't go through the proper evaluation process. Umoyalin bo. And that's the key thing for us here. The fact is that it would remain holy and there would be a prohibition of benefiting from it. And as we mentioned before, that would lead to someone who does benefit from it, the need to bring an osham me'ilos. Ulurabonon, on the other hand, ain molin bo. Even if you don't have 10 people evaluating it, the Rabbonon say you don't need to have 10 people for the evaluation of the tsinura shel hekdesh. Revoice, this is again from the posuk. Ze hashkoa soito varifos ha'eglo v'taras mitzora. These are three realms that have a kesher to the concept of Riv, an argument or controversy. The Sota woman, the Arifa So'eglo is the calf that's brought in the event that a murder victim is found between two cities. The closer city, when the murderer is not known, they bring this Eglo and have its neck is broken, and that's called the process, the ceremony of Eglo Arufa. The Taras Mitzora, the process leading up to the purification of the Mitzora individual. Each one of these now will be explained, as we did before, how there is, what's the kesher, what's the relationship between these things and the machlokes between the Zokin Mamre and the Sanhedrin, where there ultimately could be some kind of association with Dovr Shez Doinoi Koresh Shigova Suchatos. Hashkoa Sota, Beplukta de Rabbi Elazar v'Rabbi Yoshua, Disnan. Hamakaneg Lishto, one who warns his wife not to be in privacy, not to be beyichud with another man. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Mekane al Pishnaim, there has to be two witnesses that hear his warning. One has to be aware that the married woman who is suspected of immorality with another man, provided there is the necessary warning and witnessing of spurious circumstances where she is in private with someone else, leads to the bringing of this woman to the Beis HaMikdash where she drinks water from the kior, and if she is guilty, so she dies, and so does the paramour. What are the necessary details that lead up to this? So it's mentioned here. So far, we see Rebbe Elazar says mekane al pishnayim. That means you need to have two witnesses for the initial warning that heard the husband warn her not to be in private with a specific man. Umashke al pi eid echad o al pi atzmo. Mashke is a reference to the witnessing of the privacy of the situation where she went into private with this other man. Of course, we don't know whether there was an actual act of immorality. That becomes a different story. So mashke literally means we give her to drink, but it means that the necessary final step before the drinking, the privacy, according to this first opinion of Rebbe Elazar, even if you don't have two witnesses that saw her in private, one witness, or even if the husband himself says, I saw her go into into yichud with this man, she can be brought to the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Yoshua Omer, Mekane al Pishnayim, Umashke al Pishnayim. We've, in addition to the dashed underlining of the procedures, we've also dot underlined the expression al Pishnayim to draw your attention to the fact that this is the point of controversy. According to Rabbi Yoshua, you need to have two witnesses as well that saw the privacy. In other words, that saw her go into privacy with the other man. There are a lot of details to this particular section. Rashi gets involved with some of those points. Let us point out the practical application of this controversy with regard to our sugya of the Zokein Mamre. If this woman says, "I don't want to drink the water," in a situation where you do not have two witnesses. Let's say you're lacking two witnesses. Well, could she have been made to drink the water? According to Rabbi Eliezer, yes. And therefore, if she says, I don't want to drink the water, this woman loses her ksuba. She loses the financial guarantees that she had upon getting married, the ksuba. According to Rabbi Yeshua, if you don't have two witnesses that saw her go into private, she could not have been made to drink. So when she says, I don't want to drink, the law is on her side, so to speak. She still has ksuba rights. The ksuba is sometimes referred to, it's a document, but more accurately, it's a legal provision for a woman to gain financial security or financial payments upon her divorce or her becoming a widow. This woman, or every married woman for that matter, has the right to sell her ksuba to another man on the basis of a suffix. If she were to become an almona, instead of her collecting the money, the man who bought her ksuba from her, he would collect in her stead. Or in the event, likewise, that she is divorced, this outsider would gain rights to her ksuba. So, as far as these two shitas are concerned, if you say she loses her ksuba rights, as Rebbe Elazar would say, she has no right to sell her ksuba to someone else. Now, let us say she did sell her ksuba to someone else. Can this outsider, in the event that she is divorced after she says she doesn't want to drink, can he seize the money that is coming to her? And could he seize the money and then mekadesh a woman with that money? Well, according to Rebbe Yoshua, since she still had a right to sell the ksuba, that man has a right to the ksuba value that was coming to this woman. And as such, he could mekadesh a woman with that. as opposed to Rabbi Eliezer that said she lost her ksuba rights. So if he were to seize, if that outside man who bought from her the ksuba rights were to seize the ksuba value, that would be theft in his hands, and he would have no right to mekadesh a woman with it. And as we said before, the issue of a woman gaining marital status has applications to zdono kores and shigugoso chatas. Eglo arufa, as we continue in the Gemara, we see the numbering system, by the way, which we could have mentioned earlier, is continued. We listed the three of the items off, and as we explain the Gemara, we continue using the numbering system as a reference back to the initial presentation. So this two, Egla Rufa, corresponds to the encircled two on the last narrow line of the Gemara. Egla Rufa, Bepluto de Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Akiva. The machlokis between, or the controversy between the Zokin Mamre and the Sanhedrin might parallel the machlokis Tanoim that we're about to see. We mentioned earlier the Eglo Arufa is a situation where a dead body, a murder victim, is found between two cities, and there is a necessity to make a measuring, to measure from the body to the closest city. From what point on the body do we make the measuring? And if you have a situation where the two cities are almost equal distance from the body, it might make a practical difference from what point on the body the measuring is done. So we have the following source: May Ayin Hoyu Modedin. From where on the murdered victim's body do we measure to determine the closer of the two cities? Rabbi Lezer Omer Mitiburo, from his navel. Rabbi Akiva Omer Mechotmo, from his nose. Rabbi Elezer Ben Yaakov Omer Mimokom Shnase Cholol, from the point that most people are murdered. Mitzavoro, from the neck. As far as why each part of the anatomy is featured by each particular shita, that's the subject of a discussion in Maseches Sota. But for our purposes, if the Zokin Mamre and the Sanhedrin are taking two different sides in this Tanaic controversy, the issue will come up once again: is the Eglo Arufa brought by that community a real Eglo Arufa? So if the measuring is done like according to Rabbi Kiva from the Chotmo, and that's the position the Sanhedrin takes, for example, and the Zokin Mamre says no from the neck, so if the city, if they end up bringing an Eglo Arufa from the city that's closest to the neck, well, that's only according to the Zokin Mamre a legitimate Eglo Arufa, and hence, according to him, it could not be used to marry a woman, because once it's dedicated as an Eglo Arufa, it becomes Osir Bahana. However, according to the Sanhedrin, if they determine to measure from the Chotmo, from the nose, and not from the neck, so then the opposite would be the case. Once again, the issue surrounds, is the Eglo Arufa a true Eglo Arufa? And if it is, then it cannot be used to marry a woman. If it is not an Eglo Arufa, so then it could be used to marry the woman. In other words, offering the Eglo Arufa, offering this calf as marriage payment to the woman in exchange for agreeing to get married. Taras Mitzora, Bepluta de Rabbi Shimon v'Rabbonan, Desnan. The issue of the Taras Mitzora here, it's not so much a money issue as we've explained in the last couple of cases, but here it's directly an issue of Tumo and Tara, whereby someone who is Tome, if he enters the Beis HaMikdash in that state, it is a violation of a Dovrish's Doinoi Koreis v'Shigigoso Chatos. We have a Mitzora individual that needs, after his period of being set aside from the rest of the community, his signs of Tzoras have now disappeared. Ultimately, he brings a Korban, and there's a blood application of this Korban to his to different parts of his anatomy. The Gemara continues, with the issue of Taras Mitzora, that would be the controversy between the Zokin Mamre and the Sanhedrin, will parallel the Plukto de Rabbi Shimon v'Rabbonan, the Snan. Ein loy boyen yad, boyen regel, oizen yamanis. Let us say the Mitzora does not have a right thumb of his hand or thumb of his foot or ear, the external part of the ear. He lacks those organs or limbs, more accurately. Those are the normal limbs for the blood and oil application that was part of the Taras Metzorah process. And if he's lacking these limbs, according to the first opinion, Ein Loi Tara Oilomis, he cannot achieve Tara. He remains a Metzorah for the rest of his life. And as such, it would be forbidden for him to ever enter again the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Lezer Omer, a second opinion, he says, Nosein Loi Al Mekoimoi V'yotzei. On his hand, where there maybe is some, where a thumb normally would grow, if he appear, if he doesn't have a thumb, put it on the spot that the thumb ordinarily would be, or where the ear would normally be. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Nosein Al Smoil V'yotzei. According to Shimon, he does have Tara, just put it on the left thumbs and ear. So if the Zokin Mamre takes one side of this controversy and the Sanhedrin take another side of this particular machlokas, they are arguing over a matter that has an issue of zdono kare shigosuchatas, namely entrance to the Beis HaMikdash in a state of tumah. Bishorecha, also a quote from the pasuk, ze leket shikha peya. Here we're going to be reverting back to the issue of financial ownership of these items. These are all tithes or gifts that are given from the agricultural produce, particularly grains and vine products, grape products that are given to the poor. Peah is the leket shechem peah have a lot of details to them. Of course, in the context of our shiur, we're not going to be getting into any of the details. But the issue is ownership. Going over the list now, leket, disnan. Leket is a situation where, in grabbing the grains to cut them with his sickle, some of the grains escape his hand grip, and the Mishnah here delineates how many escaped grains stalks constitute leket. Shnei shibolim leket, shloisha einon leket. When he grabs a bunch of grain stalks to cut, if two escape, so to speak, his grip, those are leket. Three, however, are not leket. If, however, the Zokei Mamre and the Sanhedrin disagree over these numbers, for example, this Mishnah says that three are not leket. If one of the opinions comes and says that three is also leket, so then it would belong to the Ani. If you say it's not leket, it would belong to the Balabayas and not to the Ani. And if the Ani takes it, it would be Gezel. And if he would try to Mekadesh a woman with it, she would not be Mekudeshes. Shikha, as a person is harvesting his field, if he walks by some bundles that he left there, would that be considered shikha or not? Walking by in general and not picking up, and walking by out of, not picking up as a result of forgetfulness, would constitute shikha. But how many are forgotten? So the Mishnah says, shnei omrim, two sheaves equals shikha, shlosha einon shikha. The alkulon, with regard to all of these numbers, beishamay omrim, shalosh lani. He increases the number, that even three, if are forgotten, would go to the Oni, go to the poor man, the arba lebalabayas. Peah, the plukto de Rabbi Yishmael v'rabon. Peah is a situation of what one ought to do is to leave a corner of his field unharvested, or trees unpicked. What is the machlokis concerning peah that could be the machlokis between the Zokin Mamre and the Sanhedrin? Disnan, mitzvas peah lahafrish min akoma. The ideal way of fulfilling the peah requirement is by leaving the koma, the standing grains, uncut. Leave them for the poor. lo hifrish min hakoma. Let us say he cut the grains and he didn't leave them for the poor in a standing fashion. Well, yafrish min haomrim. So leave the sheaves in the field for them, for the poor. Lo hifrish min haomrim, yafrish min hakri. If he didn't leave them in the field at the point they were cut, but rather gathered them into a pile, nevertheless, leave some of those grains, leave some of those sheaves for the poor in the pile. Ad shelo mircho. This idea of leaving the peah is leave it, but this everything we described is up till the point that he has done the miruach. However, mircho, if he's done the miruach, that's a situation where he smooths down or shapes the pile, then maaser v'no sein lo. First, he has to take off the miser tithes, and only after that would he give the peah. Otherwise, peah itself is not subject to the miser tithe, because peah is a form of hefker. Hefker, unowned property, does not have to be tithed. However, once the farmer has gone all of these stages, up to not only gathering them into a pile, but even doing the meruach, smoothing down the pile, at that point, he has to mafrish the miser. And after he's mafrish the miser, then he leaves the peah. Mishum Rabbi Shmuel Amru, af mafrish min ha'isa. According to Rabbi Shmuel, even if he made dough out of all of the grains that we were describing up till this point, he still has a payah obligation. According to the Tanna Kamma, though, and one can see this in the Rashi, once the owner ground the grains into flour, he's koina ed b'shinui. That constitutes a major change in the original item. And since it underwent a major change, there is no longer any payah obligation, according to the Tanna Kamma. But according to Rabbi Shmuel, even if it's been ground and made into dough, there still is a payah obligation. So once again, the issue would come up. If the oni, if a poor man comes along and takes a payah tithe from dough, is that legitimately his to mekadesh a woman or not? That would depend on this machlokas. And likewise, the Sanhedrin and the Zochin Mamre might parallel this particular controversy, and the issue of the married woman, the eventuality of a married woman, is a situation or topic of zdono kores v'shigugoso chatas. Shlosha bote dinim v'chulei. The halacha said so far that the Zochin Mamre, after he argues with his own Beis Din, he eventually is taken to a series of courts in ascending order of significance. There's a hierarchy that one follows before he gets to the Sanhedrin HaGadol. Once he gets to the Sanhedrin HaGadol and he continues to argue with them, then there is the possibility of his becoming established as a Zochin Mamre. We have a topic heading with a structural note attached to it, this Nose Mivneh, that you see to the side. The diamond is featured, Machlokes Amoroyim. There is a controversy between Amoroyim. We see in diamonds Rav Kahana, and a few lines later, Reb Elazar. Im Hazoke Mamre, Omar Mipi Hashmua. Let us say the Zochin Mamre took a particular position and said, my position is based on a tradition that I received from my rabbis, my teachers. The Chaverov and the those that are arguing with him say, Kach hu bi'einenu. This is the way it appears. Our position is because this is the way we think it should be, not based on a tradition. Ha'im yesh b'kach kedei l'chaivo mishum Zochin Mamre. Is a situation like that where he is basing his position on tradition, and they, those that are arguing with him, base their position on their opinion. Is that grounds for establishing a Zochin Mamre? So we now see in the Gemara these two opinions. We mentioned Rav Kahana and later Reb Elazar. And each one, Rav Kahana himself, will feature four different situations, only the last of which, according to Rav Kahana, could result in a Zochin Mamre situation. The other situations will not result in a Zochin Mamre. Reb Elazar will disagree and will say that even if he says something based on tradition and they say something of opinion, he nevertheless could be subject to the capital punishment as a Zokein Mamre. And the reason Rebbe Lozer will give is because what he is doing, he's engaging in a machlokis, in a controversy. And being involved in machlokis is a very negative situation. We'll stop it even at the cost or even at the expense of his life. Omar Rav Kahana, Hu Omer Mipi HaShmua V'Hein Omer Mipi HaShmua Eino Neharag. If the Zokein Mamre says something, takes a position, and says it is based on my tradition, and their position is based on their tradition, Eino Neharag. He would not be subject to capital punishment. Hu Omer, a second situation, Kach Hu Be'enai, this is my opinion. V'Hein Omrim, Kach Hu Be'eneinu, this is our opinion. Eino Neharag. The Kol Shekein, Hu Omer Mipi HaShmua, and all the more so, he will be spared if he says something based on tradition. V'Hein Omrim, Kach Hu Be'eneinu, this is our opinion. Eino Neharag, he's certainly not going to be killed. We see a great premium placed on something that's based on tradition. So in that third case, he certainly won't be put to death because his position is one that he claims is a tradition. And theirs is a weaker position, something that is that developed only as a result of what appears in their eyes. Ad Shiomar, until he says, Kach hu be'enai, he takes a position that says, well, this is the way it appears to me. V'hein omrim mipi hashmua. And their position, the Sanhedrin position, is mipi hashmua, based on their tradition. Teda sharei lo hargu es Akavya ben Mahalalel. Akavya Mahalalel was a great man who argued with the Sanhedrin. However, the reason he was not killed as a result of his arguing with them, he argued with them on 4 points. And the reason that he did not was not executed is because his position was based on a tradition of his, and their as opposed to their tradition. Rebbe Lozer Omer, Afilu hu Omer mipi hashmua v'hein omrim kach hu be'eneinu. Rebbe Lozer takes a very extreme opposite position. He says, even if in the weakest situation, weakest meaning for them, where the Zokein Mamre seems to have the stronger position, namely, he says something based on a tradition he received, and their position, the court's position, those that are the Sanhedrin that's arguing with him, says, kach hu be'eneinu, this is our opinion. Neharag, he still is killed. Kedei shelo yarbu machloikos be Yisrael, so that there should not be an increase of controversy in Israel. Well, if that be the case, v'imtomar neimalo hargu as Akavya ben Mahalalel, so why was he not executed? After all, he argued with the Chachomim, with the sages in the Lishkas Hagozis, in the Sanhedrin. Mipnei shelo hoyre halacha lemaisa, because he never went back to his town and told the people to follow in a practical way his position. In other words, in order to become a Zokein Mamre, it's not sufficient that one simply argues with the Sanhedrin, but he has to go back to his own community and either himself practice what he was originally saying or tell others to practice what his original opinion is. Tanan. We have a triangle here, and this is explained in the note on the side. You will notice on the side of the Gemara a triangle featured. These are Kushios al Rav Kana. You notice a triangle here, and second line from the bottom, again, a Toshma. We will see these sources presented as a Kasha on Rav Kana's approach. We have a source, Tanan, and it says, Kach Dorashti v'kach Dorshu Chavirai. The Zokein Mamre that's arguing, he says, thusly I darshined, and thusly my colleagues said, kach limadati, kach londu chaverai. What is the contents of what he is saying over here? Thusly I learned, thusly they learned, my lav, to hu omar mipi hashmua, vehem omrim kachu beinenu. And this Mishnah is featuring a Zokein Mamre that became chayav. Is it not talking about a case where he said something, mipi hashmua, based on a tradition, and they're saying something based on their own opinion, and nevertheless, he is condemned? That is unlike Rav Kahana. We have a number 3 that we wrote in between the lines. This corresponds to the 3 that appeared above. We're making constant reference to this 3 because this was the point of controversy or the point of difference between Rav Kana and Reb Elozer. To repeat the point, we seem to see from this source that even if he takes a very strong position, namely, he bases his opinion based on a tradition of his, and they are saying something based on opinion, he nevertheless is a Zokein Mamre, and that's not like Rav Kana. The defense for Rav Kana is as follows. Hu Omer Kahu Be'enai, Veheim Omrim Mipi Hashmua. The reason he's condemned over here, and notice we have a little 4 put in, this 4 corresponds to the 4 above. This is what Rav Kana said. He does not become a Zokein Mamre until you arrive at this situation where he's saying, this is my opinion, and they are arguing based on their tradition. As we said before, opinion versus tradition is very weak, and hence he's in a bad position. Toshma, the Omar Rav Yoshia. Shloisha dvorim soch li ze'ira me'anshi Yerushalayim. 3 points were told to me by ze'ira from Yerushalayim. Number 1, Baal shemochal al kinuyoi, kinuyoi mochol. A husband that had warned his wife not to be in private with another man, and this is in the context of the Parsha Sota, the Sota woman. He had warned her, and then he rescinded. He reneged on his warning. And as a result of that, if his reneging is in fact good, is binding, then if she goes into private with that other man, she will not be forbidden to her husband. Number 2, Ben Soru Mora, the wayward son. Sherotsu Ava Vima Limcho Lo. We know that they had warned him not to continue in his ways of theft and theft of money to buy meat and wine. If they had warned him and he went ahead and did it anyway, they can back out, so to speak, and not bring him to the court. They can be moichel on the case. They can be forgiving. So it's the source says, "Ben Soromora Shirotsu Oviv Imo Limcholo Moichalinlo." They can be forgiving. Zokei Mamre, third case. Zokei Mamre Shirotsu Beis Dino Limcholo Moichalinlo. The Zokei Mamre who was arguing with the Beis Din, if they want to forgive him, they can forgive him, and as a result of that, he would not be condemned as a Zokei Mamre. Ukshebosi Eitzo Chaverei Shebedorom. But when I came to my colleagues in the south, Al Shnayim Hoduli, Al Zokei Mamre Lo Hoduli. On the first 2 cases, they agreed with me. However, on the third case, the Zokei Mamre situation, they did not agree. Namely, in the case of the Zokei Mamre, once he got involved with a controversy, they cannot forgive his being involved with the controversy. And why is it? Why can they not forgive? Kadei shelo yarbu machlikis b'Yisrael. Now we've got underlined, this is the main point, that the reason for the Zokei Mamre's ultimate condemning is because he was involved with controversy. This is against Rav Kahana. If we flip back to the previous Omid, to Omid Aleph, you'll notice under Reb Elozer's name, where we have a diamond around Reb Elozer, we pointed out that even in situation 3, which in which the Zokei Mamre had the seemingly strongest position, nevertheless he will be condemned to death. And there we also dot underline Reb Elozer's point, Kedei Shelo Yarbu Machlokes B'Yisrael, and that's what you see reflected here. And this is, of course, against what Rav Kahana had said. Before we continue in the Gemara, we'll take note of what we have written on the side, the Nosei, Ti'ur shel Ma'areches HaMishpatit v'Hashlovim sheboi hoyu potrim machlokos. We will see now how the hierarchy of courts and stages in which controversies were supposed to be resolved. Omar Rabbi Yossi, mitchila lo hoyu marbe machlokes b'Yisrael. In the early days, there wasn't a lot of controversies in Israel because there was a procedure for solving opposing opinions. Ella, based in Shel Shivim Ve'Echad Yoshim B'Lishkas HaGozes, there was a Sanhedrin that sat in the Lishkas HaGozes, a a room that was built next to the Azor of the Beis Hamikdash. Ushnei Botei Dinim Shel Esri Mishlosha. There were an additional two courts, each one of 23, as opposed to the Sanhedrin that had 71. These two courts were Echad Yoshev Al Pesach HaRabayis VeEchad Yoshev Al Pesach HaAzora. One sat at the entrance to the Temple Mount, and the other one sat at the entrance to the Azora. Ushar Botei Dinim Shel Esri Mishlosha Yoshim B'chol Ayoros Yisrael. And there were additional courts of 23 in each city of Israel. Hutzur Hadavar Lishol, if something arose that needed to be asked about, Shoyalin Mibezdin Shebeiron. Before we go further, we have some markings that we want to feature here. You have the Mivneh. You'll notice we have a triangle featured. Shlovim, stages, Benesias HaChacham Shecholek Al HaBezdin. Stages in the trip that the Chacham who argues with his Bezdin will have to take, until he becomes Achshinia Zoki Mamre. And we've also double underlined the Botei Hadin Hashonim, the different courts. So we continue here. If something needed to be asked, Sholin mi Bezdin Shebeiron. This is the first court that is consulted with. The Zoki Mamre, his position is then presented to the court in his city. Im Shamru, if they heard the way to rule, Amru Lahen, they would say what to do. The Im Lav, Boin Lazesh Shesamuch Liron. If not, they would come to a court in a neighboring city. Im Shamu, Amru Lahem. If they heard how to rule, they would inform them. The Im Lav, if they had no ruling on it, they would Boin Lazesh Al Pesach Harabais. Then they would come to the court seated at the entrance to the Temple Mount. Im Shamu, Amru Lahem. The Im Lav, Boin Lazesh Al Pesach Hoazora. The Omer. And he would state his case, Kach dorashti v'kach dorshu chaveray, Kach lomadati v'kach lomdu chaveray. Im shamu omru lahen. If that court heard, so they would say what the ruling should be. V'im lav, elu v'elu, boyin l'lishkas ha-gozis, shesham yoshvin, mitomit shel shachar v'ad tomit shel bein arabayim. They would then approach the Sanhedrin HaGadol that sat from the morning, which is a time at which the Tomit Shel Shachar was offered, the morning daily sacrifice, until the time of the Tomit Shel Bein Arbayim, the afternoon daily sacrifice. For during those hours, they were seated in the Lishkas HaGozes. U'b'Shabbosos V'yomim Tovim Yoshin B'Chel. On Shabbos and other holidays, they would not sit in the Lishkas HaGozes, but they would sit in the Chel, an area further away from the Azora. The Rashi mentions on the upper part of the narrow lines, Mipnei Sha'om Rav Umokom Tzar Lehem Belishka, because on those days there was a large crowd and they didn't have much room in the Lishkas HaGozes. Inami, another approach which Rashi prefers, Shelo Yu Nirim Kiyoshim Bedin, they shouldn't appear as if they're sitting in a session, because on Shabbos and Yom Tov courts were not designed to paskin cases. In the Lishkas HaGozes, that was their official place for ruling cases. Nish'alo Shelo Bifnehem. The question was presented to the Sanhedrin. Im Shamu Omru Lahem. The Im Lav Omdim Laminyan. If they didn't hear about this particular issue, and they didn't have a precedent for it, so they would then take a vote. Im Lav, that's Omdim Laminyan. Ravu Hametamin Timu. If the majority ruled that something should be considered impure, Tomei, then they would declare it Tomei. Ravu Hametarin Tiaru. And if they would rule that it should be Tohar, so be it. So they would rule Tohar. Skipping the brackets for a moment, Misham Koisvin Vishochen Bechol Mekomos. From the Lishkas HaGozes, from the Sanhedrin HaGadol, they would send a message to all of the locations, all the different parts of Eretz Yisrael. Kol mishu chocham shval berach v'das abrios nochei menu yehei dayan biro. This announcement stating the qualifications of someone to be a judge in his community. Before we go on in the Gemara, let's go back over the bracketed section. We have a note concerning the brackets on the side. Achrei hasagraim, habraisa mamshicha im tiurim hakshurim le Sanhedrin shiyoshu v'lishkas gozes. After the brackets, it's mentioned, as we just demonstrated by skipping it, the brisa continues with descriptions that are relevant to the Sanhedrin HaGadol.
In the brackets, however, there is mention of a later period of time, and it says in the brackets, "Misherabu Talmidei Shammai veHillel Shelo Shimshu Kol Sorchon," when there was an increase of students of the great Tanoim Shammai and Hillel that didn't spend sufficient amount of time learning by their Rabbonim, Ravu Machlikis b'Yisrael, there increased controversy in Israel. V'nasis Torah k'shtei Toros, and it appeared as if there were two Toros in Israel. But as we said before, now we continue with the descriptions concerning the Sanhedrin themselves. Misham, from the Sanhedrin, Kaisvin v'shochin b'chol makomos, messages would be sent out to all places, describing the qualifications for someone who could be appointed as a judge. Kol mishu chacham, who is wise, anyone who is wise, ushval berech, and is humble, v'das habrios nochemenu, and is approved by his community, people like him, yehei dayan b'iro. He is qualified to be a judge in his community. If someone from an upper, higher court dies, so then, Misham Malin Oisoi Laharabayas, from the local court, he would be promoted to be, if someone from the higher court died, so there would be a shuffling, so to speak, of seats, and he would go from his community seat to the Harabaya seat, because that person who was in the Harabaya seat moved up a notch, so to speak, to the Azora court. This is all a result of someone from the Sanhedrin HaGadol dying, whereby someone from the Azora court was moved up into the Sanhedrin, so there was this movement of one position ahead at each stage. So it's mentioned here that from the local court, he would be promoted to the Harabayas court, and from that court, Misham LaAzora, to the Azora court, the court that sat at the entrance to the temple courtyard, and Misham LaLishkas HaGozes, and the replacement person that was needed in the event someone from the Sanhedrin HaGadol died, he would come from the Azora court. Hence, once someone from the Sanhedrin passed away, there would be, as we mentioned before, this shuffling of positions up one notch. Shochu mitam, it was sent from Eretz Yisrael, Ezehu ben Olam Haba, who qualifies as a person to be a ben Olam Haba, a person that will enjoy a portion in the next world. Anvason, Ushval Berech, two expressions referring to humility. Shayef v'ayel, shayef v'nofik. Ayel is to enter. Shayef is to be bent over. In other words, a person who walks with a humble spirit about him, as opposed to with his nose stuck up in the air. That's shayef ayel, shayef v'nofik. He also, when he exits. Nofik is to exit, also in this bent over fashion. It's pointed out that these are actually three expressions of humility, and there's a note that says that's on the inside of the margin that is put in by the printers, that there must be several different types of humility. Another qualification for being a ben olam haba, the goras b'iraisa tadira, who was constantly involved with Torah study, v'lo machzik tivuso lenafshei, and also who someone does not take credit for himself. Yavu bei rabbonan einei hoin, the rabbis looked upon, b'rav ula bar abba. Apparently Rav Ula bar abba was a person that had these qualifications. Chozar li'iroi v'shana. As far as the Zoki Mamre is concerned, it was said that after he had his controversy with the Sanhedrin HaGadol, he would then go back to his city and teach over. Tanu Rabbanan, Eino Chayav Ad Shiase Kairosoi. He is not Chayav Misa until he actually does like he originally taught or originally ruled. O Shiyura Lachirim Viyasu Korosa, or he instructs others to do as he originally ruled. Before we continue, let us glance at the topic heading that we've assigned to this sugya, the nosei, Eino Chayov Vizoke Mamre Ad Shiyase Korosa. V'yesh l'shol, there's room to ask the following question. Gam lifnei shehofach liyo Zoke Mamre, even before he was designated as a Zoke Mamre, hu hoya mischayev, he would have been guilty anyway. Because, as we see at the end of the day, his ruling was a ruling of a ruling that's not accepted. So whatever he originally ruled, he would have been chayev anyway. He would have been guilty anyway. But my shayna shenia zokei mamri. In what sense is he any different now that he's become designated as zokei mamri? Even without that designation, his ruling was a ruling of guilt. The Gemara now deals with that. Bishlama yira lachirim v'yasuka raso. This aspect of his becoming a zokei mamri and being condemned to death as a result of going back to his community and teaching others, instructing others to do as his original ruling, I understand now how things have changed. Meikara, before he got to the Beis Din in the Lishkas Agosis, Lav Bar Kaplahu, he wasn't someone that was subject to a death penalty. Vahashta, now that he has argued with the Sanhedrin and gone back to his community and told others to follow his ruling, Hashto now Bar Katlahu, he's now become a Bar Katla. Only now, whereby he wasn't that before. Elo, but as far as the first example, and notice we have a question here that lasts about four lines. We have that as indicated by the long question mark, and you could see the kuf that's encircled with the vertical dashed line that follows it, indicating the length of the question. Ela shiyasa kehoira oso. But as far as his having argued with the Sanhedrin and going back to his community and then following his own ruling, well, me'ikora nami bar katlahu, originally it's the same ruling that he said originally and that he's sticking by now. So originally he also was a bar katla. Had he followed his ruling originally and follows it now, what difference is it? Does it make? Ha tenach, I can understand that originally he wasn't a bar katla, hecha de'ori b'chele v'dam, where his original ruling concerned a topic of, let us say, forbidden fats and dam and blood. Those are prohibitions. The chele v'dam are prohibited for consumption with a penalty of kores. There is no capital punishment associated with that. So had he done, let us say he had ruled originally that chelev and dam, let's say certain aspects of those things were prohibited, permitted. Let's say he ruled that originally, and he argued with the Sanhedrin on those points, and now he came back, he left the Sanhedrin and now consumed them. The meikar olav bar katlahu. Before he argued with the Sanhedrin for chelev and dam, there is a kores penalty, being, let's say, cut off, dying young, losing children. There is a penalty called kores, but it's not death, it's not bar katla, it's not execution. Vahashta, and now that he's argued with the Sanhedrin, if he consumes the chelev and dam, which is what the matter that he ruled on originally, and he consumes it now, bar katlahu, he's now subject to execution because of the newly acquired designation of zokein mamre. Elo hecho de oiri bechayve misois bezin meikora nami bakadlu. Let us say he ruled regarding a matter that was chayav misois bezin. Let's say, take as an example a Shabbos matter. Let us say that he ruled that a certain performance of a melacha on Shabbos is actually permitted, and we know it's not. Had he originally done that Shabbos violation, he would have been subject to execution anyway. What difference does it make that only now he becomes a Zokei Mamre, which is tantamount to saying that only now he becomes subject to execution? The answer is as follows: Meikara boi hasra. Beforehand, he required a formal warning before committing that particular violation. In our example, the Shabbos violation. Hashta, now that he's been to the Lishkas Agosis, lo boi hasra, he doesn't require any further warning before being condemned. The Gemara asks, Mesis. Notice we have this volcano marking around the word Mesis, as we did two lines above around the word Ella. We noted in our marking, in our topic heading and the structural note, these are questions. So this now is a question. Mesis, the issue of the person involved with seducing others into idolatry. Let us say the Zokei Mamre is a person that's arguing with the court regarding a matter of maces. Well, maces de lo boy hasro amayikol amemar. Let us say he was engaged in maces activity, in seducing others to idol worship. Well, that even originally, even before he appeared before the Sanhedrin, he did not need there was no necessity to have a warning before condemning him. So what difference does it make that he appeared before the Sanhedrin and argued on this matter? Answer, there still is a difference. Meikora I Omar Taimo Mekablino Mine. Originally, if he was brought into court on the grounds that he was involved with maces, and he explained himself, he tried to explain himself, we would listen to his explanation. Hashta, now that he's argued with the Sanhedrin on this matter of maces, I Omar Taimo, if he tries to offer some kind of defense explanation, lo mekablino mine, we won't accept it from him any longer. The Mishnah. Chomer b'divrei sofrim mi b'divrei Torah. There's a stringency that we'll soon discover regarding rabbinic matters than Torah matters. Ha'omer ein tefillin kedei lavor al divrei Torah poter. If someone were to argue, there is no mitzvah of tefillin in the Torah, and say that as some type of legal ruling, he would not become a zokei mamre, because this is not considered a horah, a ruling, because tefillin is something that's written in the Torah. It's called zil kri beirav. If you have any doubts about whether tefillin is a mitzvah or not, just open up a Torah and you'll see that it's a mitzvah. However, chomesh totafos lehoisif al divrei sofrim chayav. If, however, someone rules that there is a mitzvah of tefillin, but there are five compartments in the tefillin shorosh, in the tefillin that are put on the head, we know there are only four. And how did we come to four? Four is something that's derived through drushus chazal, through analyzing the word totafos, and that's called divrei sofrim, something that's arrived at through. Through analyzing points in the Torah. And he comes along, some Zokin comes along and says that there are five compartments in an attempt to add to what the rabbis ruled, Chayav. He can become condemned based on that. Before continuing in the Gemara itself, let us glance at the topic heading here, the Nosei. Rak Hoiro B'Tfilin, only a ruling concerning tefillin, lahoisif bias, to add a compartment. Yesh bo kidei lishayev mishum zokein mamre. Only through this kind of ruling, only through this particular ruling, can a person become a zokein mamre. Aliba de Rabbi Huda, le'el pei zayin omer aleph. This is an analysis based on the teaching of Rabbi Huda that was found on pei zayin omer aleph. So if you have the ability to flip back to pei zayin omer aleph, you will note there, we saw three opinions of Tanoim. Under what circumstances does a person become a Zokin Mamre? Rabbi Huda had said, Rabbi Huda Omer, al devar she'ikoro midivrei Torah upirusho midivrei sofrim, something whose basis is found in the Torah and whose explanation is through the rabbis. The Gemara continues, Omar Rebelozer. We have noted his name, we circled his name, because he's the prominent opinion in this particular sugya, and we've also assigned a long point marking, nikuda aruka. You can see the nun that's encircled with a vertical dashed line following a few lines down, indicating that all of these lines are part of the point that Rav Elozer is going to make. Omar Rav Elozer, Omar Rav Shaya, Eino chayov, elo aldovar shikoro midivrei Torah upiyushu midivrei sofrim. There is no chance of becoming a Zokei Mamre unless he is arguing concerning a topic that has a basis in the Torah. In other words, it's not a purely rabbinic mitzvah or ruling, but it's something that's based on the Torah, upirusho midivrei sofrim, and its explanation is explained by the rabbis. V'yesh boi lehoisif, v'im hoisif goyrea. And there is something in his ruling that adds to the Pirush HaChachomim, that adds, there's an addition in his ruling to what the rabbis explained the mitzvah should be, and by the adding, he is ruining the original mitzvah. In other words, there was a chance of the original mitzvah being in place, and he comes with a ruling that ruins the original mitzvah that was in place, and of course we'll explain this in the course of the Gemara, the Ein Lanu Elo Tfilin Halibud Rabbi Yehuda. And the only example that we are able to come up with is the example of Tfilin as according to Rabbi Yehuda's teaching. And we mentioned this before, Rabbi Yehuda, who mentioned that Zokin Mamre comes about as a result of something that's based on the Torah and Pirusho Midivrei Sofrim. What we've done in the markings, we've dashed underline Ein Lanu Elo Tfilin. The only example we're able to come up with that meets these qualifications is Tfilin. The Gemara will be raising a couple of questions, and that we've indicated with the diamonds. You'll notice under our Mivneh heading in the margin, the diamond is featured, Birur Legabi Mitzvah Sacheros. We want to clarify and in effect ask questions regarding other mitzvahs. We've also double underlined with a special double underlined with dots between the double underlines. These are dugmois shel mitzvos acheres, examples of other mitzvahs. So as you glance at the Gemara, you can see immediately we're going to be asking from the case of lulav and tzitzis, where those mitzvahs as well seem to have the qualifications just mentioned. And the question then is, why did Rav Elazar Amar Rabbi Shaya say onu ein lanu elo tfilin, that the only example we're able to come up with is tfilin? The Gemara asks, Va'ika lulav. Is there not the example of the lulav? We have the four species that are taken on Sukkis. The ikaro midivrei Torah, upirusha midivrei sofrim, that it's the lulav is a mitzvah that's based on the Torah, and its explanation is based on rabbinic explanation. The yesh bo lahoisif, and there is room to add items, add things, vim hosif goran. By adding, you are ruining. You are reducing. You are ruining it. So, that's the question. Now, the analysis. Is this really a question? Belulav, my svirolei. In the case of lulav, what do you, my svirolon, what do we hold with regard to the setting up of the lulav? Isvirolon, we've underlined the expression isvirolon, you see it here, and the next line as well, emphasizing the two possibilities. At the end of this little discussion, you'll see that lulav does not qualify. Isvirolon de lulav ein tzorech eged. If you hold that the lulav with its additional species, we know that together with the lulav, we have, besides the esrog, we have hadasim and arovas. If you hold that the lulav does not require a binding, that they don't have to be bound together, well, let us say the person takes a lulav, hadasim, and arovas, and adds a grape branch. The way we would look at that is, hai lichudei koi, v'hai lichudei koi. Each item stands on its own. The fact that they don't have to be bound together really says that each one of the things you're taking stands on their own. And as a result of that, each one standing on its own, there is no goreya. There is nothing, even though you've added a grape branch to your collection, so to speak, nevertheless, it stands separate. It's not part of the mitzvah. And the three things that are part of the mitzvah, three species that are part of the mitzvah, stand on their own as part of the mitzvah. The e sviralon de tzorach eget. And if you hold that the lulav requires a binding, and now, and this fellow came along and bound together, he tied together the lulav with the hadasim arovas and the grape branch, well, then it was never a good lulav in the first place, because as part of the requirement we just mentioned, it has to be bound as well. So when you prepare them together, it's gorua v'omedhu. It wasn't in a state where it was good, and then by adding it became bad. It was never good in the first place. Question. Vo'ikot tzitzis. The ikaro midivrei Torah pirusho midivrei sofrim v'yesh bo lahoisiv im hoisiv goreya. What about the mitzvah tzitzis, which is found in the Torah? The fact that tzitzis requires four strings, which are then doubled over with knots, as you may be familiar by having seen tzitzis already. But your basic tzitzis is made up of inserting four strings into the hole that is in the corner of the garment. Now, those four strings were arrived at through Pirusha Midivri Sofer, because the Torah uses the word gedilim. The word gedil means two strings. Gedilim would be a plural of two, namely four. Now, if you add So then, are you not, by adding, also ruining? So why do you say that this phenomenon exists only by tefillin? So the Gemara once again analyzes. Well, let's take pause and analyze. B'tzitzis my svirulon. What do we hold with regard to tzitzis? E svirulon the kesher ha'elyon lav d'oraisa. If you hold that the upper knot, according to Rashi, the upper knot, though this is something that's discussed in Rishonim, but according to Rashi, it's the knot that is made closest to the corner of the beged. In other words, the four strings are inserted, and then a knot is tied. If you hold that kesher elyon is not d'oraisa, and what did I do? Instead of putting four strings in, I put five strings in, and then I tied them at the corner of the garment. Nevertheless, we would say, hai l'chudei koi, v'hai l'chudei koi. Rashi at the bottom says, hai l'chudei koi, dekevan delo nikshar, eino chibur im hashar, v'haroi l'mitzvah hi mitzvah, v'oidef k'misheino. Since the kesher elyon is not midoraisa, so then it can be viewed as if it's not tied. Maybe, technically speaking, you did tie it, but even so, it's viewed as if it's not tied. So your four strings stand on their own, and the additional string stands on its own. It doesn't interfere with the mitzvah. The E, Sevirulon, the Kesher Ho'elyon, Do'raisa, as we look at the top of Daf Pei Tesamar Aleph, if you hold that the Kesher Elyon is a requirement from the Torah, then what did I do? I put five strings in and then tie them together? Gorua v'omeid. It was bad at the outset. It wasn't a situation where I had something kosher and then it became bad by my adding something. As soon as I tied it, I tied the five strings together, I was making something no good in the first place. The Gemara now asks, well, if this is the way you're analyzing these items, well, how do you see that tefillin are any different? The Gemara asks a question. We have a long question marking here with the kuf that's encircled and a dashed vertical line that follows, indicating the length of this question. E achi tefillin ami, if so, regarding tefillin as well. E ovid arba bati, if you made four compartments, the isi achrino, the anach gabayu, and you brought a fifth compartment and attached it to the four that you made initially, hai l'chudei koi, v'hai l'chudei koi. Each, the four stand on their own, and the additional one stands on its own. How have you ruined anything? The e ovid hamisha bati, and if you made initially five compartments, gorua v'oimedhu, you made something no good at the very outset. So in regarding tefillin also, you don't have a situation where something was good at the beginning and made bad by adding something. The Gemara says that's not true. In the case of the tefillin, I'm not going to be able to say hai l'chudei koi v'hai l'chudei koi. In other words, if I made four compartments and then I pasted on a fifth compartment, I have, by pasting on, I have ruined the mitzvah. Ha'omar Rabbi Zera, bayis chitzon she'eno roya eso avir, the outer compartment, either compartment number one or number four, depending on how you look at the compartments of the shel rosh, but the outer compartment that does not see the air, in other words, it's not exposed, puzzle. So that if I had four compartments and then I pasted on a fifth compartment, I'm thereby covering up that which is supposed to be exposed. So I started off with something good, and by adding something, I now ruined it. And that is unique to tefillin, and as a result of that, I can't say hai l'chudei koi v'hai l'chudei koi, and hence tefillin would be the example through which someone could become a zokin mamri according to Rabbi Yehuda. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.